We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short.
Hello, and welcome to the Papers podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Mark Tebbs, and I'm a freelance consultant. Today, I'm really pleased to be talking with Lottie Shipp, who is a PhD student and who is the lead author of a paper entitled The Relationship Between Disassociation and Panic Symptoms in Adolescents and the Exploration of Potential Mediators. This was recently published in the JCPP Advances Journal. Lottie, thank you for joining me. Really looking forward to our conversation today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Good, good. So could we just start with an introduction? Maybe if you could say who you are and the people that you worked with on the paper.
Yes, of course. I'm a first year PhD student at the University of Oxford. I'm supervised by Polly Waite and Eleanor Lee, and my research focus is anxiety disorders in adolescents. So my main interest is understanding some of the key factors that contribute to the maintenance of anxiety disorders, with the aim of then using that knowledge to inform the development of interventions that are really brief and effective. But this current paper, which we're discussing today, that explored dissociation and panic symptoms, and that was written following our undergraduate project. So we worked with another student, Elisa Musatova, to decide on the research questions and then to collect the data. And we were supervised by Polly Waite and Emma Chernis. So Polly's research is really focused on understanding anxiety in adolescents and developing effective interventions. And she's done a lot of work on panic disorder in particular, mainly because it usually has its onset in adolescents and it's not really so common in younger children. And Emma's research looks at dissociative experiences and their link with mental health difficulties. And she defined the concept of the felt sense of anomaly dissociative experiences, which were the focus of our paper.
Great stuff. Thank you. So let's turn to that paper then. So if you could just start by giving us a brief overview, and if you could just define some of those key terms that are used throughout the paper.
Yes, of course. So overall, the paper was aiming to better understand this potential link between dissociative experiences and panic symptoms, and then some of the potential mediating factors in adolescents, which we use 13 to 18 year olds. So if we start with defined dissociation, because it can be a bit confusing, and there's a lot of debate surrounding its definition, but generally we can think of it as a kind of feeling of being detached from yourself. It's sometimes referred to also as depersonalization, or being detached from the world around you. And that's what we would normally term derealization. And some people say it feels a bit like being in a dream, or like you're viewing yourself from an outsider's perspective. But overall, it's a really broad umbrella term that covers lots of different experiences that differ from person to person. And I think here it's really important to note that feelings of dissociation are actually really common in the general population. And lots of us can probably relate to feeling a little bit spaced out or dissociated, maybe when we're really tired or stressed. And for most people, it's a very normal and harmless sensation. But when it becomes more severe, that's when it's linked to a number of psychological disorders. So you might often hear about dissociation with relation to PTSD or psychosis or anxiety disorders. And we specifically looked at a concept called felt sense of anomaly dissociation, which does sit under this bracket of dissociative experiences. And it's defined as a feeling that something isn't quite right. So a sense of strangeness within your mental content, your body, perception, your experience of yourself or your surroundings. And it can feel like detachment, unfamiliarity, or a lack of control. And it's a construct that was developed by Emma with a bottom-up approach. So it was based on the lived experiences of people who reported dissociation. And so it covers lots of those experiences that otherwise we might term as depersonalization and derealization. But what makes it different is it isn't constrained by that same kind of top-down description. So it's a slightly different concept, which is why it's measured separately. And in this study, we also looked at the relationship between felt sense of anomaly dissociation and panic in young people. And we looked at different emotion regulation strategies, cognitive appraisals of dissociation, and alexithymia. So if we just quickly define what we're talking about by emotion regulation, we looked at two different strategies. So cognitive reappraisal, which is adaptive. It means you're changing your interpretation of a situation in a way that makes it less distressing. And we also looked at expressive suppression, which is something that most people do from time to time, but actually it becomes quite problematic if you use it all the time and you're always suppressing your emotions and you don't have any flexibility in that. And because we were interested in this cognitive approach, we also looked at cognitive appraisals of dissociation. And there's a really important distinction here to be made between this concept and cognitive reappraisal. So cognitive reappraisal is an emotion regulation strategy. So that's when you're changing your interpretation to reduce the emotional impact of a situation. But cognitive appraisals of dissociation is referring more to the content of that interpretation. So it's the belief that someone holds about their dissociative experience. And that's often quite negative. So thinking you might be losing your mind or losing control.
Thank you. That's really comprehensive. Just turning to the original research objectives, it'd be really interesting to know why you wanted to focus on panic and dissociation, whether there are any particular research questions you were trying to answer.
Yes, so we were really interested in it because we know that panic disorder is really quite common. So it's estimated it affects about 3.5% of 17 to 19 year olds, but those statistics are based on pre-pandemic levels. So it's also possible they might have increased a bit. And it might sound like quite a small percentage, but panic symptoms are actually exist on this kind of continuum. So they're not only experienced by that 3.5% of young people who meet the criteria for panic disorder, but they're actually also reported at least one panic attack every year by around 2/3 of adolescents. And we know that they're really distressing and they can have a really detrimental effect on young people's ability to socialise, to go to school, to get public transport, to develop independence, all those normal sorts of things that young people should be able to do. And because of it, it's really important to be able to understand better how panic symptoms relate in young people. But there isn't very much existing research about the role of dissociation in particular. But that's quite surprising because actually between 25% of young people who report panic attacks also experience dissociation. So I think the main aim of our research was to really unpick that relationship and see whether the ways that adolescents regulate and understand their emotions and the way that they interpret feelings of dissociation might influence that link between dissociation and panic.
Excellent. So how did you go about the study and were there any particular methodological challenges that you had to overcome?
So we conducted our study online and we used social media advertising to recruit young people who were aged between 13 and 18. And we asked them to complete the same set of questionnaires at two separate time points with a 1 month gap in the middle. So these included the CHEFSA, which is the Chernus Felt Sense of Anomaly Scale, and that was our measure of dissociation. And we also had questionnaires about panic symptoms, interpretations of dissociative experiences, the use of emotion regulation strategies, and alexithymia as well. And we had actually a really great response. We had over 400 young people providing data at both time points. I think one of our methodological challenges here was thinking about how we measure panic in the general population without having a diagnosis of panic disorder as an inclusion criteria. But as I mentioned earlier, because panic symptoms are experienced on this continuum, with around 2/3 of young people reporting at least one panic attack in the past year, that means we could use the panic disorder severity scale for adolescents. So this is a measure that assesses panic symptoms and the level of distress and impairment that they're associated with. And we actually found that the mean panic score in our sample was about 9. So to give you some context there, some previous research that uses the same measure, but in a clinical sample, has a mean of about 13. So as we predicted, we did have lower levels because we were looking at a community sample, but they were still high enough that we could get some meaningful results. And I think one of our other methodological challenges was just making sure that our questionnaires could be understood by young people because dissociation is quite an abstract and complicated thing to be talking about. And we wanted to make sure that they're really developmentally appropriate. So to do that, we asked a young person to give us some feedback on the measures that we used before the study. And as a result of that, we made some very minor changes to the vocabulary just to make sure that they were really clear and really understandable for adolescents.
Thank you. So turning to the results, what were the key findings?
So our main finding was that higher levels of this felt sense of anomaly dissociation at the first time point were associated with higher levels of panic symptoms reported the following month. And that relationship was partially mediated by cognitive reappraisal. So more dissociation was then associated with less use of cognitive reappraisal and more severe panic symptoms. And we also found that the way that the young people interpreted dissociation played a role in the relationship. So cognitive appraisals of dissociation was also a significant partial mediating factor. So the adolescents who had higher dissociation and more negative interpretations, so for example, seeing dissociation as a sign of losing control, they experienced more panic symptoms. And when we actually conducted a more exploratory set of analyses, and we added baseline panic symptoms that were reported at the first point into the model to control for our initial levels of panic, we found that those mediators weren't significant anymore. And we think that that's because we had quite a short time gap between our assessment points. It was only a month, and the panic symptoms were very stable across those two time points. So it does mean that our results can't tell us much about the temporal relationship between those two factors. That's really an area for some future research. But the findings do fit really nicely into the kind of cognitive behavioral interpretation. So when young people who experience dissociation generate a really negative or upsetting interpretation of that symptom, so if they're seeing dissociation as a sign of losing their mind or not being in control of their body, and then importantly, if they don't reinterpret that experience in a way that makes it less distressing for them, then that can lead to more anxiety and escalating panic symptoms as well.
Thank you for that. So was there any aspects of the results that surprised you?
I think we were a bit surprised that expressive suppression wasn't a significant mediator, because we do know from existing research that people who have panic disorder or high levels of panic symptoms, they have more of a tendency to kind of bottle up their feelings. So maybe as a way of sort of hiding panic symptoms from other people or controlling that anxiety. And in adults, there's been a link between expressive suppression and higher depersonalization or derealization. And so initially we predicted that the same would be true in adolescents as well. But actually we found that expressive suppression that was reported at the first time point wasn't significantly reported to panic symptoms reported 1 month later. And actually we think that that might be due to the tendency of people with higher levels of panic to be quite hypervigilant to their physiological symptoms. And we think that that hypervigilance, it's possible that isn't present in people who use expressive suppression kind of more habitually, because they're actively trying to ignore those internal sensations instead.
And so I'm just thinking about the potential implications of the study. So maybe starting with looking at the kind of research field.
So I think this study provides nice evidence for a link between dissociation and panic symptoms in adolescents and the role of some of those potential mediators. But as I mentioned, we really weren't able to explore the temporal relationships. And I think that's an area that would be really great to be researched more in the future. And our findings are really nice insight into panic symptoms in the general population of adolescents. But what we don't know necessarily is if those relationships would be the same in people who have a diagnosis of panic disorder. And it might be the case that their experiences of, for example, felt sense of anomaly dissociation, that might be different, or potentially they could use different emotion regulation strategies. So we looked at two different strategies in our study, but it's possible that in a clinical sample, there could be more dependency on processes like catastrophizing or ruminating, or those pathways to panic might look a little bit different. So that's also something I think that it'd be really interesting to explore in the future. But overall, I think this study really sets the scene for the ways that we understand panic in young people, and looking at the ways that they might interpret those feelings of dissociation and regulate their emotions as potential maintaining factors. It really highlights how important a cognitive interpretation of an internal experience is in panic in young people, which is really valuable finding when we're thinking about the factors that keep panic symptoms going and how we might think about then breaking those cycles in treatment for panic disorder.
Excellent. And thinking about that from a kind of practitioner or an intervention perspective, what are the kind of implications of the study?
So because we used a community population, we'd obviously need to do a little bit more further research before we would generalize our findings to a clinical sample. But I think hopefully what our findings show practitioners is that where dissociative experiences are reported by young people, and when they're persistently misinterpreted in this negative or catastrophic way, that could potentially be one of the factors that contributes to the maintenance of panic symptoms. And I think just being aware of this is really valuable, and it might be worth thinking about the ways that young people are taught about dissociation. So kind of normalizing that feeling and hopefully reducing some of those negative interpretations. And it would be really great to see any further research that explores this more in the future with a more clinical sample.
And have you got any kind of further research in the pipeline? Is there anything you'd like to share with us around your ongoing work?
So not by myself personally, but there is more work being done on the CHEFSA, which is this felt sense of anomaly measure that we use in the study by Emma Chernis. And she's very recently published a paper with a short form of the measure, which has been validated for use in adolescents who are 13 and older. And that will be a really valuable tool for future research into this field in dissociative experiences in young people going forwards. But in terms of my research for my PhD, I'm interested in further exploring cognitive behavioural interpretations of anxiety in adolescents. Moving slightly away from panic disorder, I'm currently looking at generalised anxiety disorder and some of the mechanisms that maintain it. So things like cognitive avoidance, positive beliefs about worry, and intolerance of uncertainty as well.
Thank you. But we're coming to the end of the podcast. Is there a kind of final take-home message for our listeners?
Yeah, I think the main thing to take away is definitely the relevance of dissociative experiences. I don't think they're often discussed with relation to panic, maybe as much as they should be, given how common and distressing they are, and particularly for those young people who have either panic disorder or elevated levels of panic symptoms. And I think we've really highlighted the dissociative experiences, and importantly, the way they're interpreted and the way that you manage your emotions, that those factors do play a role in panic symptoms in young people. And again, I think it'll be really interesting to see where that research goes in the future.
Thank you so much, Lottie. It's been a really interesting podcast. More details on Lottie Shipp, please visit the ACAM website, www.acam.org, and Twitter at ACAM. ACAM is spelled A-C-A-M-H. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues.